Hi, I'm Darren Pepperd. Welcome to the Leaning Into Leadership podcast, the podcast dedicated to today's hardworking leader. Join me every Sunday for leadership insight, inspiration, and a little pep talk to keep you rolling down your road to awesome. All right, friends, welcome into episode 127 of the Leaning Into Leadership podcast. And this week on the show, my guest is Megan Lawson. And if you don't know Megan Lawson, here is what you need to know about Megan Lawson. Megan is a thought leader who studies and implements the conditions and systems needed for transformational change. Megan is a lover of learning who believes in the goodness of people. She works to cultivate spaces that honor the humanity of all people, and she promotes storytelling, the exchange of ideas, and risk-taking. Megan is the author of the new book, Legacy of Learning, and is also the author of an absolutely brilliant blog by her name, Megan Lawson Blog. You've got to make sure you check that out. Megan is somebody who just brings a lot of passion to the table, who really stays focused on the importance of people. Now, if you listen to this show regularly, you know that that's something that I talk about a lot, that we are in the people business. And I think that's why Megan and I connect so, so very well. She and I've had a number of conversations recently, and we finally hit record on one of them. And you're going to have the opportunity to hear that today. And in that conversation, we're really going to dive into how do we help our educators manage that overwhelm? You know, that tipping point between a little bit of stress and that's too much. The tipping point between we need to move forward, we need to continue to grow, and we're not ready as an educational community to take this next step. This is such a wonderful conversation, folks, and I know you are absolutely going to love it, and you're going to get the whole thing right after this. Are you a school or district leader looking to unlock the full potential of your team? Do you dream of a cohesive, empowered staff all marching to the same beat? Well, then look no further. Introducing the ultimate solutions, high-performance leadership teams from Road to Awesome, our two-day leadership retreat designed exclusively for school and district leaders like you. And picture this, a tranquil setting, away from the hustle and bustle, away from the email, away from the phone calls and the constant interruptions. Over the course of two transformative days, you and your fellow leaders strategize, collaborate, and align your visions. You dive deep into discussions, workshops, and team-building activities all geared towards one common goal, unleashing the collective power of your leadership team. But this isn't just any retreat. It's a dynamic, hands-on experience crafted by experts in education and leadership development. You'll walk away with practical tools, actionable strategies, and a renewed sense of purpose to tackle any challenge that comes your way. Imagine the impact of having your entire leadership team on the same page, working effectively and efficiently towards a shared vision. With our retreat, that dream becomes a reality. So if you're ready to revolutionize your leadership approach, inspire your team, and drive real results in your school, don't miss out on this opportunity. Reach out now to start planning your two-day leadership retreat and take the first steps towards transforming your school for the better. Visit roadtoawesome.net or email me at darren@roadtoawesome.net to set up a free consultation and launch your team into a successful year. Your journey towards exceptional leadership, your journey on the road to awesome starts right here.
Hello, middle-level educators. Are you looking for a nationwide type of conference at the fraction of the cost? The North Carolina Association for Middle Level Education welcomes you to Charlotte, North Carolina, March 24th through the 26th for the 2024 NCMLE Inspire Conference. My name is David James, NCMLE Marketing and Conference Director, and I want to personally invite you to our annual conference. You will not want to miss our keynote and featured speakers that lead over 120 middle-specific teaching and learning sessions. Our featured speaker lineup includes EDU experts from across the country, such as principal and leadership expert Baruti Kefele, Charles Williams, LaQuanta Nelson, Zach Bauermaster, and the host of the Leaning Into Leadership podcast, Dr. Darren Peppard. The NCMLE Inspire Conference is for everyone. Go to ncmle.org to register your team for the 2024 NCMLE Inspire Conference today.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and a podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get on to the episode.
We come across people that we get connected with on social media, and you just realize, man, I've got to have a conversation with that person. I've just got to find a way to get connected with that person. And the interesting thing about today's show is my guest, Megan Lawson, and I have been connected for quite some time. And for a long time, I have thought to myself, man, I have got to connect with Megan Lawson. I've got to have a conversation with Megan Lawson. Finally, a couple months ago, that happened. And today, we're actually now hitting the record button, and we're going to have that conversation on a podcast. So I'm so excited about this conversation today. Megan, thank you so much for joining me here on the podcast.
Oh my goodness, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much. The feeling is mutual.
Oh, well, thanks so much. So, man, there was so much cool stuff we were talking about before we hit the record button. People we have in common and here comes winter, a whole lot of other stuff. Before we dive into our conversation today, for folks maybe who don't know Megan Lawson, just give them a quick, elevator version of who you are and what you're all about.
Yeah, you can see on some of my profiles that I often say I'm a lover of learning who believes in the goodness of people. And I hope that that's reflected in the way that I lead and the way that I work. I'm currently a director of secondary teaching and learning in a school district in the Cincinnati, Ohio area. Teaching and learning can mean a lot of different things. I could go into probably more about what that role is, but essentially I am very grateful for the opportunity to work very closely with principals and teachers in all matters, curriculum, instruction, assessment, special education. But I was a high school English teacher. That's how I started my career, and also went into the middle school space. And I think that's where I learned how to be a good teacher. I was challenged in the best possible way by those seventh grade students in my English class. And I've been an assistant principal. I've been an elementary principal. And I've been an educational consultant, and I'm in the district office space now. But mostly I'm just proud that every day I put on my sneakers and I roll up my sleeves and I get in the work with people and we figure it out. And so that's just a little bit about me.
Oh, that's awesome. There's so much there that I'm so curious about. I really do want to dig in a little bit more into your role. When we talked the first time, you had kind of shared with me, it's kind of a role that you've kind of created on your own as you've been going. But before we do that, though, some parallels with the two of us. I taught at the high school level. I was a science teacher, but I actually started as a middle school teacher. And I'm just always intrigued to hear about people's middle school experience because, there's some who, man, I'm in middle school. That's my place. That's where I fit. That's my jam. That's my vibe. Others who are like, I survived 5 years of middle school before I went on to the high school level or whatever the case may be, right? Talk a little bit more about that. I mean, you mentioned you had seventh graders. I had eighth graders. I just think middle school kids are fascinating creatures.
They sure are. So I had a pretty uninspiring start to my career in general before I entered the high school English classroom. I wanted to be a professional dancer on Broadway. And my mom, a very practical single mom, encouraged, single parents, she encouraged me to have a backup plan. And very quickly, my backup plan became my actual plan. And essentially, I don't know that I was really excited necessarily to be a teacher. And I just try to talk very openly about that. I needed more experiences to develop a passion. I think experiences often lead to passion. And so for me, I needed more experience in the classroom in order to develop a passion for instruction. And so what happened, when I know this won't surprise very many high school teachers, there weren't applause. You know, there wasn't applause or standing ovations for a lot of my lessons. And I was used to, you know, in the theater world, life's a performance, and, you know, you kind of get that validation on the stage. And I had to learn that it wasn't about me at all. It was about them. And that's where the reward lies, is in, you know, their enjoyment and little moments of brilliance that they have themselves. So I struggled with high school for that reason. And I chose high school, honestly, because, again, I was too worried about how things looked for me. So I thought, oh, well, it's impressive to be a high school teacher. People think you're smart, right? If you're a high school English teacher, you must be very well read. You must be a great writer. You know, you must know literature and know the classics. And I was not having a good time. And I have a feeling that my students would tell you that they weren't having a good time either. I was doing a lot of, like, read the book, talk about the book, assign the paper, grade the paper. And, like, that just is what happened. It was very transactional. And I knew that I wasn't where I was supposed to be, but I didn't know where I was supposed to be. And the only thing I could do, I was 712 certified, was to try going down grade levels instead of up. And so I went to middle school. And there, I think at first I thought, oh, well, these are just, you know, like high school kids, but they're younger. And I could not have been more stunned that that was not true. Oh, right. Like, we're going to have to learn how to, you know, like procedures in class and sharpening our pencil. And we've got students who are much more like elementary. We've got students who are a little more like high school, and we're all over the place and we're just figuring life out together. And it was there that I learned to fall in love with their growth and development, and tying connections, making connections between my moves in the classroom and things that were happening for them. But it took me a little while. And so I just try to be really honest about that, because I think there are these people who have these beautiful, and I don't want to take anything away from these beautiful stories. They have these beautiful stories of, my mom was a teacher, my dad was a teacher, I played school growing up, I always knew I wanted to be a teacher. That was not me. And I thought, am I where I'm supposed to be? And you know what? It took me a while to be where I was supposed to be and be who I was meant to become as a teacher. And I just want to be honest about that.
But I think that ties in so much with, I mean, what the educational journey is all about, right? I mean, every one of our kids is not, you know, in the same place as every other kid. Maybe they're sitting in the same room, but, you know, academically, socially, you know, developmentally, they're not all in the same place. And in middle school, wow, you couldn't be any further from them all being in the same place. And so I think truly, middle school teachers and being at a middle school is such a great place to really figure out who you are as a teacher, as much as it is for our kids to start to figure out who they are, because they really do start to form those identities, you know, a little bit more in middle school probably than anywhere. But I think that's really interesting. I really appreciate you sharing that part of your journey. It makes me wonder now with the other pieces that were there, you know, assistant principal, elementary principal, and now this district role, especially being in charge of secondary education. So all things secondary teaching and learning and what other things happen to fall on the other duties as assigned for you. When you reflect on your time, both at a high school level and at an element or a middle school level, rather, how do you draw on those things to lean into the teachers that you're serving, to support the schools that you're working with, to ultimately help to move your district forward in the work that you're trying to accomplish?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Every now and again, I'll put together a good question. And typically, it's not pre-written. It's just like, poof, right off the top of the head.
You know, I wish I could remember who this quote is by, but someone once said something along the lines of, the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your questions. And you're going to find me like, I'll probably say, that's a great question. That's a great question. But I genuinely am going to be excited about your questions. I just think questions open so many possibilities for us. So speaking of questions, I think even beyond my own experience, or perhaps maybe my own experience in the classroom has impacted me in a way that makes me curious about other people's experiences and their perspectives. And so and maybe because I struggled so much in the early years of teaching, I just find myself knowing that I don't know it all and that I need to rely on other people and their voices and their experiences when making decisions or when brainstorming possibilities. So some examples of how that shaped my leadership, you know, I do different focus groups with students, you know, just sitting and making space for students to talk to me about their experiences and their feedback about school. Some of the best, most practical, like, why didn't I think of that, ideas often come from students who are living the experience that we're creating every day, and have a good grasp of, you know, those little things that could just take it to the next level. And then same with teachers. I mean, I think it's educational malpractice to make big decisions or make assumptions about what's happening in schools without being in classrooms and talking to staff. And so that's really, really important to me.
Well, I think that's absolutely critical. And sometimes I'm curious about your early leadership career, because that's kind of what that's speaking to me a little bit. Is, you know, a lot of early career leaders don't have that thinking. They don't have that I guess level of metacognition, you know, that awareness of what their role really is and where they truly are in the room. So often that first, second, third year leader thinks, I have to have all the answers. I have to know the answers. I have to provide the solutions, as opposed to what you just talked about, which is sit down and listen to your kids, sit down and listen to your staff. Decision-making can be so effective when we don't do it in a silo. Did you grow into that, or are you just this amazing person who just, I mean, and you are, by the way, but this amazing person who just, man, you know, I'm going to listen all the time and make sure that decisions get done this way. Did that come naturally, or did you learn that through experience?
I think I had to learn it through experience. If I'm being perfectly honest, I'm going to keep learning it throughout my entire career. I've not arrived. And here's one small example, and I actually talk about this in my book. So when my first year as an assistant principal, I was wanting to raise, you know, staff morale. I wanted it to feel more positive. I wanted people to feel seen and appreciated. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do staff shout outs, and every week I'm going to shout some people out. I'm going to keep track to make sure that, okay, you know, these are the people that I've gotten a shout out in a weekly communication, but maybe I'll get to these people next. The staff hated it. They hated it, and they complained about it, like, don't shout me out. Like, I don't want people, you know, and I hate that has to be true sometimes. Like, it's how we feel. It's like, oh, I don't want to shy. I don't want anyone to notice, you know, feel like they have to do something different because I'm doing. But here's the thing, like, I just did that, and I was very confident, like, well, this is exactly what the staff needs. And I just, like, made this, you know, small move with quotation marks around it, thinking like, well, who could hate this? This is going to be awesome. But it is amazing, like, how, you know, we assume, yeah, and we get a little overconfident about things, and not everything lands the same way for all people. Not everybody receive recognition the same way. Not everybody feels appreciated the same way. And we could be daunted by that, or that's an opportunity for us to say, wow, this is rich with possibility. How might I learn each individual at a deeper level and just see if there are little things that I might do to make sure that they feel seen and like they belong and they feel celebrated in the ways that work best for them. That's just one small blunder. And I gave you like a soft, yeah, like ball answer. I could tell you the number of times I've cried in my office over bigger ones. But,
well, we probably won't go too deep into that. I mean, we can if you really, really want to. I can, you know, lean back like, you know, like I'm in the therapist chair here, but that's really not the point of the show. But I'm curious. If I remember correctly, this role that you're in as a district that you were in, you left, and then you've since returned to it. I would imagine, just given the turnover of teachers just across the country, that when you came into this role, it might have been teachers, could be administrators in the schools that you serve as part of your role. What did you have to do to go about building relationships? Because what you're talking about is, in order for that understanding to take place, it's about building relationships. And I talk about relationships here on the show all the time. So I'm just kind of curious what steps you've taken, because certainly other people who transition from one role into another, or from one district into another, one state into another, we all face that challenge. So I'm just going to capitalize really quick and find out maybe some awesome Megan strategies to building relationships.
I don't know how awesome they are, but I will say that I've learned that I can't do everything well, but that's one thing that I have to do well, and that I want to do well. If we don't have strong relationships and trust, we have nothing, and the work cannot move forward in the way it needs to. And so, you know, there are things that I know I'm not as good at, and I'm not saying I'm not doing the other parts of my job, but this is a priority for me. And so some examples of what that looks like. I mentioned earlier, like, I wear sneakers, because I walk, we have big buildings. I walk all over those buildings. And I try to make time on my calendar once a week, at the middle school to walk every hallway. And then when the door is open, I just say hello. And it's as simple as that. And sometimes they're excited about what they're doing and they invite me in, but there are, hardworking, teachers who, probably were understandably skeptical about people like me from the district office, and probably somebody who maybe has seen turnover over time, who, you know, it took me a couple years to have them say hello back, or to, you know, smile back. And I've learned to, and I've learned this from a book I recently read called How to Know a Person, to view that as just their form of self-respect. They're just, you know, they are opening up at the pace at which they're most comfortable. And it takes a certain level of tenacity to still, you know, say hello and still make sure that I like wave and still, you know, that I'm not like pulling back. I'm not like trying to barge into their classroom, but they still know that I see them and that they can respond like accordingly, like at their comfort level. But that's the kind of thing that I know can wear some people out. And there are some of the relationships I'm the most proud of are the people that probably started off the most skeptical about me. And the level of trust that we have and the kind of work that we've been able to do. So we also have instructional rounds that we do as a team with our district administrators, that's principals, district admin, and coaches. And we go into classrooms and we only share positive feedback on post-it notes. We do a protocol from Mike Rutherford called the 30-second feedback protocol. It comes from, you know, he's got the artisan teacher and he's got the companion documents that have some really smart strategies. We're really explicit with those positive affirmations of this is the instructional move and this is like its impact on teaching. I've heard from a lot of teachers that they're saving those notes. They've got tons of them in their drawers. And I've had people say, okay, and we collect also like, you know, not teacher specific data, but data about things that we're seeing. And then we also, you know, things we're not seeing. So we know where we might need some PD. But as far as those notes go, people have pushed back on me saying, okay, well, when are you going to nudge these people? Like, when are you going to give that? I'm not doing that in this space because we do not spend enough time affirming the good with great specificity so that those people feel encouraged and nourished to try again tomorrow. These jobs are too hard to not be intentional about that and be disciplined about it.
I think that's just really huge right there. You know, I work with, you know, schools all across the country. And, you know, so often that's one of the pieces that inevitably leaders ask about or want additional support on is those instructional rounds. And, you know, boy, you know, can you help me develop a template for a tool or for a feedback this or for that? And I mean, all of those things, yes, that's important. And yes, we do want to talk about, you know, this particular instructional strategy has, you know, this type of an impact on on students, or hey, let's talk about, you know, maybe the level of questioning that's there. You know, if we were to modify the question to do this, that could take us a little bit further, you know, in terms of the student and, you know, with their depth of knowledge, blah, 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 all of that. But what you just said is the most important thing. We've got to ensure that those instructional rounds, that those conversations, the feedback has to be affirming. It has to be, you know, something that lifts them up and reminds them, you know, hey, you're doing good work. And even if you see something that isn't super strong, you know, let's be that person that kind of reaches that hand down and lifts them up a little bit and, you know, give them a little pat on the back and say, you know, hey, let's try again tomorrow. Let's just keep moving forward. Because, you know, let's be honest, right now, you know, across the country, the overwhelm, the struggle for our educators is real. So, you know, in addition to that strategy that we just talked about, what are some things you're seeing or that maybe you guys are working on, or that maybe even, you know, you talk a little bit about in the book with helping educators just manage that just sheer overwhelm that they're dealing with?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. I mean, to start, we just are working hard as a leadership team to be mindful of what things are doable hard and what things are destructive hard. And avoiding, you know, the work that's destructive hard, and seeing if we can, you know, be more in that doable hard space. Also, you cannot outpace your community's readiness for change. So being prepared, right, for, okay, we could take this on right now. We're going to socialize this right now, though. We're not there yet. And, you know, there's a delicate balance, because you could probably convince yourself that you're never going to be ready. But knowing that community enough and being in dialogue with people enough to understand, you know what, I think we can inch forward on this one. This one needs to maybe sunset. Just making sure that we're not taking on more than the school community can handle is one thing. And that's just my little note of encouragement to people who have the authority to lead change in their schools. For those who are busy doing the amazing work of teaching in the classroom every day, you might not have the same level of influence over, you know, system change. And I think just being aware of our role that we sometimes play in our own misery is just really important. You know, sometimes, I mean, I've caught myself doing it in the last week, my own thinking. And then I use the cognitive triangle in my book: thoughts lead to feelings and feelings lead to behavior. So my own thinking can lead to certain feelings, and those feelings lead to behaviors that don't move the work forward in the way that I want it to, that don't advance a relationship in the way that I need it to. And all because I'm just swimming around in my own negative stew. And so how can we just be a little bit more self-aware and honest with ourselves, and also reach out to people when we need someone to talk through that with? So that's like one thing I've just been thinking about, and also just being realistic about what we can take on. We have these big, beautiful dreams and goals and big bleeding hearts for kids and so much need out there. And I think sometimes we make the work so impossibly big that we quit before we've gotten very far, or we get paralyzed by the dauntingness, you know, feeling that we have about this big thing. And so we don't start at all. And we're not setting ourselves up for success. And some of the most influential things we can do require not as much of a lift. It's just sometimes hard to remember the essentials when there's so much noise surrounding our profession and our communities.
Well, you're so right, too. You know, you just look at everything that is there, and it can be just this insurmountable obstacle in the road if we don't just look at things, you know, one step at a time, you know, focus on the things that we can actually control, let go of those, set aside those things we can't control. It's so hard to do. But you know, if we just show up as our best self, trying to just focus on what we can control, it's incredible what will happen. And I love the self-reflection that was in there. Folks, if you're watching the video, you could see that on Megan's face. If you're just listening, trust me, there's a lot of self-reflection as you are talking. And that really takes me right to the next topic that I want to get to with you. And that is that you are very reflective, and you've done that reflection in a number of ways. And I don't want to answer this question for you, but certainly blogging has become something that is huge for you, that you've been doing for quite some time. And I'm certain that there's a self-reflection element to it. But let's talk a little bit about the blog, about the origins of the blog, the purpose. You know, what does the blog do for you, not for others who are reading it? Why did you start blogging, Megan?
I really did start blogging for my own learning, but I'll also share something I don't know if I've ever shared on a podcast. I also started blogging because I didn't feel like my voice mattered in some spaces that I was in. I didn't feel heard. And I felt myself shrinking a little bit in some of those spaces, you know, and being kind of quiet and hanging back. And I had some things that were really important to me that I wanted to say. And so blogging has been a space for me to not worry, you know, about whether or not my voice matters. It's just like, it's my voice and it's my place where I reflect. And so what if somebody doesn't, you know, like that blog post? I had to get over that early, right? Like, what if I put this out there and somebody hates it? Well, inevitably someone's going to hate it probably at some point. Yeah. But is that why I'm doing it? Am I doing it to look really impressive to other people, or am I doing it because this is what really matters to me, and this is what my learning is right now and what I'm reflecting upon for myself? And the flip side of that has been the unexpected reward, which is that I've had this incredible sense of community through that blog and through my book even. When you realize, like, I'm really being true to who I am and my values and what I believe, and I'm living that out in this blog, which is keeping me accountable for living it out in my work in the public school on a daily basis. And then other people say, me too, that post for me, yes, like, I'm thinking about that too. I care about that. I believe in that too. Like, I get chills just saying that, because it makes me feel like, okay, like, I am onto something. Like, this is something that maybe has some merit. Like, I am going to try again tomorrow. And it's the thing that I think has quite literally saved my career, because this work is hard. No matter what position you have in a school, it's hard. And you have to find your people, and you have to find a place to learn and reflect and to find encouragement and joy. And that's just what I found every week in my blog for the last 3 years.
So some may push back and say, well, but you were an English teacher. I'm not an English teacher. I'm a science person. I'm a PE teacher. I teach music. I'm an elementary school teacher. That doesn't matter, does it?
I mean, I don't think it does. And I'm sure they're going to roll their eyes like, of course you don't think it does because you're the English person. But to me, you don't need a degree in, you know, ELA education to be a writer. And, you know, you're a writer if you write. You're a runner if you run. You know, you're name the thing. Like, if you're doing it, then it's part of who, you know, and you believe in it, then it's part of who you are. And that's what I would say to that, I guess.
I think that's fantastic, because I think some people just are afraid to start, right? They see, you know, boy, Megan's got this incredible blog. She's had it for years. And nobody's going to want to read it. Or maybe they have that imposter creep in a little bit and they're just not sure. I mean, I've been blogging for a long time as well. I mean, you and I were talking before we even hit the record button about, you know, a mutual acquaintance that we have, a good friend of mine, Dwight Carter. It really was the guy who kind of kickstarted me into blogging. And it's just like, it's for you, I think is the key piece there. And so folks, what we're telling you is if you're thinking, boy, you know, hey, maybe I'd love to try a blog, just do it, you know, just start a blog and just write. And if people read it, cool. If nobody reads it, don't worry about it. It's designed for you, not for others. Now, that said, as somebody who is a reader of your blog, there are a lot of great things there, though. Like you said, it has created quite a community. What are some of the things you hear from people? What are some of the, whether it's comments or people just, you know, they'll shoot you a DM on Twitter or anything like that? Do you hear from people who are maybe early in that blogging process asking for some guidance or some advice?
That's a great question. See, I do that. That's a great question.
Yeah, there you go. You're making me feel real good about myself. You really are. I appreciate that. Yeah.
I think what I hear maybe, you know, well, let me start by saying there are weeks where it's quiet out there around my writing. And so that's normal. And I want people to know that that is normal. And that doesn't mean that what you wrote didn't matter and that you shouldn't have written it or that you shouldn't have published it. I still do that sometimes where it's like, this one's like, you know, I haven't really heard from anybody about this one. I wonder if this one's not any good.
And then right. I was like, it's okay. Usually one that you're like, I really thought this was good. And it's like crickets. What's going on?
It can make you second guess yourself. And the same thing that you said, yeah. I have to remind myself, I didn't write this, you know, for other people. I wrote it for myself and I just happen to share it so that I can keep my learning connected with other people and learn from them. And in return, that's the whole point, is that we get to learn from each other. But I think the thing that I might hear the most is affirmation that talking about small moves or small, seemingly small things can make a big difference in the lives of other people, and that it's not just fluff to see the good and affirm the good and nourish the good. I think throughout my career, I've wondered if this focus on positive psychology that I have, not toxic positivity, but, you know, doing what's good for you and what's good for other people and trying to grow the good. I think some people have maybe mistaken me to just be nice. Like, I'm nice. And that might mean that some of my capabilities as a leader are less because I'm nice. But the truth is, I'm not talking about being nice. Nice is passive. I'm talking about growing culture. And I'm talking about pouring into other people. And I'm talking about uncovering the hidden gems of potential inside other people. And on their darkest of time, like that they can't see it for themselves, that you say, I see this very specific, beautiful thing in you. And that together we all like leverage the strengths of the team and have this, you know, collective shared impact, because our world quite literally counts on it. And those are the kind of things that matter to me. And so when other people say, you know what, I believe in that too, and that's important to me too, and I'm working on something similar about growing the good in my school community, it makes me feel like, okay, I'm not just nice.
Love that. Just love that so much. We could talk about blogging forever, but I want to talk about your book a little bit. You've alluded to it a couple of times, and you know, I'm always curious. So the book is Legacy of Learning, Teaching for Lasting Impact. And I'm always curious the kind of the driver behind the book. You know, there's a fantastic story that I read actually in your blog. It was kind of a teaser that you had put out right when the book was coming out about your first grade teacher. Just such a powerful story. Up to you if you want to share that or not, or maybe people should buy the book just to read that, because folks, it's that good of a story. I'm just curious, Megan, like, what's the driver behind the book? What was it that motivated you to go from I'm writing a blog to now I'm going to write a book?
You know, George Kuros was the one that that helped me to see what I'm about to say next. And that is that if you blog over an extended period of time, you start to see what you believe. You start to uncover threads and patterns in your thinking. And you also are crowdsourcing a little bit, like, wow, this is connecting with, you know, people, and this maybe not so much. And what I found myself gathering momentum on through the blogging process is the fact that we are overworked, overstimulated, and overwhelmed in school. And that's true in most roles. And I'm worried about us, quite frankly. And yet the future of the world depends upon what happens in our schools. I really believe that. And I think we found a way to overcomplicate some of our work as educators and as leaders. And I was just looking for my path. I just was almost writing home, like what felt like home for me, what felt right for me, what are the essential things where I'm not going to get these five things right, these 10 things aren't going to be, but if these essential things can be true, I think I can make the kind of impact that I desire on other people. And you know, I think it was the book Otherful. I don't know if you're familiar with that book, where they talk about changing the world through others. I mean, I think that's what we're all trying to do. And I guess where I landed with this book is that we can't do our best work if we aren't well cared for ourselves. And a lot of times what happens is people will be like, well, I'm all about, as a leader, doing what's best for kids. So if you don't want to lead, that's about what's best for kids, then like, I'm not your leader. Well, both can be true. We can care about what's best for our students and care about what's best for our staff. And in fact, often, you know, the best way to take great care of students is to take great care of staff. And so while we're all trying to figure out this complicated system of school that feels overwhelming and daunting, I just wanted a path forward for what we control in a classroom every day or in our individual school to take good care of ourselves, take good care of staff, and take great care of students with small moves that require little to no planning, so that we see that these jobs can be manageable, meaningful, and fun. A lot of people will say these jobs used to be fun. These jobs can be so fun. And yeah, we can still make a big difference. And we have an obligation, I feel, as a profession, to show other people how incredibly fun and meaningful and manageable these jobs can be, so that they want to go on and be teachers too. But if we keep walking around with our hands in the air, like just so stressed to the max, and like making this look like this is impossible, because that's how a lot of us are feeling, that's sending the message to other people, like, oof, I don't think I want to be a teacher. Kids might think that they don't want to be a teacher. Teachers might think they might not want to be a principal. Principals might think they might not never want to lead a district. And I'm not saying anybody should have to want those things, but I want them to know that it's a possibility for them. And every day we're out there representing what this profession can be. As my friend who, you know, works for Disney says, every interaction is an opportunity to grow the brand. I want our brand to be, wow, these jobs are manageable, meaningful, and fun. I want to live a good life and do great work. And I think everybody wants that. And that's what this book is about.
And folks, you've got to get this book and get it in your hands and read it, because it is really fantastic. We've reached that point in the show, Megan, where I'm going to ask you the same question I ask everybody here on the podcast. It's the Leaning Into Leadership podcast. So, Megan, how are you leaning into leadership right now?
I am working on being really honest with myself about what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling and maybe where that's coming from, and then responding accordingly. That means when I'm wrong, I just say I'm wrong. If I'm sorry, I need to like say I'm sorry. I'm working on being about the greater mission and cause at hand, and less about whether or not I was right or I got it right on the first try.
Very powerful stuff right there. Appreciate it so much. So people are going to want to get in touch with you. They're going to want to grab a copy of the book. We're going to put links in the show notes for all of that stuff, to the blog, to the book, that kind of stuff. But how do people catch up with you on social media? How do they get in touch with you?
Oh, I hope people reach out. I would love to be connected. So I'm on X at Megan_Lawson. My first name has an H in it. I'd love to interact with you in that space. I'm also on Instagram, Megan Lawson Blog. You can find me on my actual blog, meganlawson.com, and my email address is on there as well.
Perfect. Like I said, we'll make sure all that stuff is hyperlinked in the show notes. Megan, this was such a great conversation. I'm so glad that we finally had the opportunity to sit down and have a conversation, that we hit the record button so everybody could listen to it. And man, I'm looking forward to the time when I'm going to finally get an opportunity to meet you in person.
Oh, likewise. I could have talked to you for hours. I love learning from you, and I'm grateful to be among the many smart, influential guests that you've had on this show. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. Outstanding conversation today with Megan Lawson. Again, Megan, thank you so much for being on the show, for being my guest here on Leaning Into Leadership. Folks, make sure that you get down there into the show notes. Click on the link. If you're not following Megan's blog, make sure you're doing that. Make sure you follow her on social media, and definitely get yourself a copy of her brand new book, Legacy of Learning. Folks, it's fantastic. You will not regret it. I promise you that. And now it's time for a pep talk. Well, this week on the pep talk, I want to talk about maintaining momentum. You know, you're heading into that time of year when state testing is right around the corner, when master scheduling is upon you, when the budget season is happening, when hiring season is coming. And there are a lot of different things that can maybe pull your eyes off the prize. But as the leader of your school, as the leader of your classroom, as the leader of your district, you really want to lean in over the next few weeks and capitalize on the momentum that you have gained up until this point in the year. You want to really help reinforce the work that people are doing, help keep them focused on student achievement, help keep them focused on teaching and learning, on that academic achievement throughout the spring months, because these are the months when it starts to get tough. The weather starts to get a little bit nicer, people start looking outside a little bit more, your spring sports have begun, and it's easy to lose that momentum. Instead, really lean in, reinforce, recognize, reward the things that you're looking for, and those things will continue to happen. Capitalize on that momentum, folks. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Leaning Into Leadership podcast. Have a Road to Awesome week. Thank you for listening to the Leaning Into Leadership podcast, brought to you by Road to Awesome. Don't forget, click subscribe, give a review, and share this with somebody who might also enjoy leaning into leadership.